From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, it's called Aftermath, Preparing for Survival with Lawrence Joseph after 2012. Well, here's what's happening. BP began testing the new tighter-fitting cap tonight that could hopefully choke off the oil leak in the Gulf of Mexico. Retired Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen, the Obama administration's point man on this disaster, said the government gave the go-ahead after carefully reviewing the risks. What he said is, what we didn't want is to compound the problem by making an irreversible mistake. The cap, a 75-ton metal stack of pipes and valves, was lowered onto the well in hopes of either bottling up the oil inside the well machinery or capturing it and funneling it to the surface. But before BP could test the equipment, the government stepped in because of second thoughts about whether the buildup of pressure from the gushing oil could rupture the walls of the well and make the leak worse, something that Captain Kelly Sweeney has been talking about on the program. Well, it looks like somebody was listening to you, Kelly, at least in the beginning, huh?
Ahoy, George, to you and all listeners, and yes, thank you. I hope so. And you know, I have from my sources information that BP has major concerns that the cap is not going to stop the spill. And they are really pinning their hopes on the relief well, which is now, I found out, past the 18,000-foot mark. They think they are within 100 feet of the original well. They brought in an expert from Cornell University who is now conducting magnetic testing to find out the exact location. And I have one thing I wanted to pass on to the listeners, George, that I found out today.
Go ahead.
From a contact on the vessel at the scene, that what we've been led to believe all the way along was that the reason BP was putting the dispersant below the surface of the water was only because of the oil, but that is not the case. It is also because of the methane. There has been so much methane coming out of this well that they were concerned that if we were all allowed to rise to the surface, it would cause explosions and fires and completely shut down the recovery operation.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kelly. And that's something Richard C. Hoagland has been talking about on this program now for weeks, the possibility of a methane bubble that could float to the top and just create all kinds of problems. As a matter of fact, there have been some reports as well that the methane is in the atmosphere and people are beginning to breathe it. Apple is calling a news conference on its iPhone 4 issue. The company will meet with reporters on Friday. The issue reached fever pitch when Consumer Reports, the magazine, said it would not recommend the phone despite giving it its highest test score among all tested smartphones. Analysts and pundits have speculated on what, if anything, Apple's fix might entail. Now, these range from doing absolutely nothing to distributing free rubber bumpers to ordering a full-blown Toyota-style recall of every iPhone 4 they have made. The government took a big step toward eliminating from stores, hotels, and daycare centers any crib with a side rail that can be raised and lowered, the so-called drop-side cribs. The Consumer Product Safety Commission proposed new rules that would ban the manufacture, sale, and resale of drop-size cribs. This push to ban drop-side cribs came as the commission announced the recall of 82,000 cribs from the popular retailer Pottery Barn Kids. The cribs could pose a suffocation or entrapment risk to young children. Parents should avoid using household teaspoons to give your kids medicine, as they say the sizes can vary widely, according to both under and overdoses, according to a study. U.S. and Greek researchers looked at teaspoons in 25 households and found that the largest was three times the size of the smallest, and they all should have been the same size. Well, they say a woman's body shape may influence how good her memory is, according to U.S. researchers, although carrying excess weight anywhere appears to impair older women's brains. Carrying it on the hips may also make matters worse, they say. The Northwestern Medicine team found that apple-shaped women fared better than pear-shaped women on tests. But Depositing fat around the waist increases the risk of cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. Federal Reserve officials have a slightly dimmer view now of the economy than they did in April, reflecting worries about how the European debt crisis could affect U.S. growth and job prospects. Federal officials said in an undated economic forecast that they think the economy, as measured by the gross domestic product, will grow between 3 and 3.5% this year. What does it all mean? Here's Gerald Celente from TrendsResearch.com. Gerald, what do you think?
One big Fed con game. It's the summertime blues. When most people aren't paying attention, they're lowering their expectations. And let's get this right, George. We heard Fed Reserve Chairman Bernanke back in 2007 in November, when the recession began, saying that we wouldn't go into one. So these numbers that they're coming out with, they're just getting people ready for lower expectations. Because if they say weaker, you can count on feeble.
Why do I get the impression, Gerald, that this is being propped up, and it's being propped up, and it could go at any time?
Because the stimulus money is running out. It's happening worldwide. It's already happened in Europe. It's happening. The numbers are coming in lower, and they're cooked. They just came in from China, lower than expected. And as the stimulus money wears out, there's been no rebound. That stimulus money, when you follow the money, it just went to the too big to fails. So this, as we've said all along, George, get ready for the crash of 2010. Everyone will recognize it before the clock strikes 2011.
All right, Gerald, thank you. Gerald's website will be part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. If you remember the old Roy Rogers television show, you'll remember his horse, Trigger. Well, a Nebraska cable TV network has ponied up $266,000 for Roy Rogers' stuffed and mounted horse Trigger at an auction in New York City. The movie Cowboy's faithful companion was bought by the cable company in Omaha, Nebraska. I don't know why. It's an age-old riddle that has perplexed generations. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? Now, British scientists claim to have finally come up with the definitive answer. They say the chicken. The scientific philosophical mystery was unraveled by researchers at universities. The scientists found that a protein found only in a chicken's ovaries is necessary for the formation of the egg, according to the paper. The egg can therefore only exist if it's been created inside of a chicken. Go figure that out. They say plants are able to remember and react to information contained in light. Researchers say that plants transmit information about light intensity and quality from leaf to leaf in a very similar way to our own nervous system. Think about that the next time you eat a carrot or a piece of celery as it screams. Our feature story at coasttocoastam.com. A barn in Hood County, Texas has become ground zero in the hunt for the chupacabra. There's a video there. This is a very strange looking creature. Earlier this week, an animal control officer by the name of Frank Hackett shot and killed what he says, one of the strangest creatures to ever walk the planet. That much we know. What's less clear is whether this is really the chupacabra. If you want to take a look at it, it's at coasttocoastam.com, right up there with the video. Officer Hackett said he was careful not to say whether this was or was not the mysterious beast. He's awaiting the DNA tests before he makes up his mind. He says one thing he does know, it was not normal. We've never seen anything like it. You know, as we reported a few days ago, the FDA is seriously considering whether to approve the first genetically engineered animal that you would eat, salmon, that can grow at twice the normal rate. But what does that mean to all of us? What does that really mean? Up next is our genetic expert, Jeffrey Smith, on Coast to Coast AM. Well, he's our go-to guy when we talk about genetically modified foods. Jeffrey Smith, Executive Director of the Institute for Responsible Technology and a leading spokesperson on the health dangers of genetically modified foods. Here he is this hour on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Jeff, let's go out to a fish restaurant and have some salmon. What do you think?
Well, now it's okay, but hopefully it'll be okay in the future. But a company called Aqua Bounty wants to introduce genetically modified salmon onto the plate. And they say that they have passed 5 of the 7 data sets at the FDA, and they expect approval for the last 2. Now, they've been optimistic for years. Back in 2004, they said it would just be a few months, maybe a year or two away. And in that year, some other studies on a similar salmon designed to have excess growth hormone, and so it grows much more quickly, some scientists did studies with those salmon and put them in tanks of 50. And when there was enough food, there was no problem. But when the amount of food was reduced, the frankenfish freaked out. They started eating each other and killing each other off to get to the food, both when they were mixed with regular wild salmon or with just the frankenfish. And so there were complete extinctions in these tanks down to 0, or in some cases from 50 down to 2 or 3. Now, you don't read about that much in the current salmon that's up for approval because they're not putting out the information that they used to. They used to say that the purpose of the salmon, that this Aqua Bounty salmon, was to drive the price down on salmon so that customers can get it cheaper in the supermarkets. And now they're spinning it, saying it's designed to feed the hungry world, which is the standard mythology regarding genetically modified crops as well. Now, there's no genetically modified animals approved for human consumption right now. There is a glowfish that was put on the market that glows in the dark because it has jellyfish genes inserted, so it's just a fish tank type fish. Here, they've taken Atlantic salmon and inserted a gene from a Chinook salmon and a promoter, which is an on switch, which turns the gene on from an ocean pout. And what the gene does is it produces a growth hormone, which allows the fish to grow to full size in just about 1.5 years instead of 3 years. Now, some of the dangers here, of course, are to health, because there's all sorts of unpredicted side effects that can occur.
Sure.
But imagine if the salmon got out and they discovered a problem. Imagine being hired by a company to do a recall of salmon from the ocean.
Oh, it's impossible.
It's impossible. Now, if they put this salmon into the fish pens on the coast, hundreds of thousands of salmon have actually broken out during storms when nets have broken. And so it used to be that Aqua Bounty was saying that that's what their plan was, but now they're just saying, well, we're going to just sell the fish eggs for people to grow the salmon in tanks inland. But, you know, once it gets out, you can't control it. You can't be sure that absolutely everyone with your fish egg is going to protect it from the ocean. And they say that the fish that they'll sell will only be females and sterile, but it's a leaky technology. Not all of them will be.
Now, this company, Aqua Bounty, is based in Massachusetts, but it's publicly traded in London, right? That's what I hear.
That's right. And one thing is that they've been pushing it and pushing it for a long time, and people fear that if it gets approval, it'll open up the floodgates for other genetically modified animals. The next in line will probably be the EnviroPig, developed to produce less phosphorus pollution in its manure. So they're genetically engineering animals to meet the requirements of factory farming rather than structuring farming to meet the requirements of nature.
Jeff, they've got us because they're talking about 9 billion people on this planet one day. And, you know, they're trying to scare people that there's not going to be enough food for all of them. And so they're pushing these genetically modified foods, the corns, the soybeans, and now the salmon and God knows what else. The fear factor is going to get this done. You know that.
Well, I don't think so, because the thing is, I think the fear factor is going to work in the other direction.
When?
I think what we're seeing now is the fear factor of people concerned about the health dangers. Now, I've been looking at more and more of the health dangers. I decided to do an investigation. People ask me, as I've been speaking around the world, well, if GMOs are so bad, I mean, like, for example, the American Academy of Environmental Medicine last year said that animal studies link GMOs to infertility, digestive problems, organ damage, other types of reproductive problems, immune system problems. And people ask me the question, well, if it's so bad, what about the livestock in the United States whose primary feed is genetically modified soy and
right.
corn.
That's right.
And so I decided to poke around and try and answer that question. Now, I wanted to have a full staff interviewing veterinarians who'd been in business since before GMOs were introduced in 1996, but I don't have that resource. So I just started speaking to some, and I got what I needed pretty quickly from both farmers and veterinarians. I talked to one farmer, and he said that when GMOs were introduced, he noticed a lot of problems with livestock, and the vets that had reported the problems from pigs say that they had ulcers in their stomachs. So he, in a very interesting way, what he did is he brought a bunch of pigs to a slaughterhouse, and some were genetically engineered fed and some were not. And he had the slaughterhouse hold back the pigs' stomachs, and he looked at them, and sure enough, those that were raised on genetically modified feed had a lot more ulcers in them. And I've seen the pictures. They're disgusting. But it's absolutely telling that the innards of these animals are different. I talked to another farmer, and he does butchering of his own products along with a friend of his, and they find that when they butcher an animal that's been eating GM feed, he said the stench is terrible, and the colors of the organs are different, and the color inside, the color of the fat is different. His wife won't even serve their kids anything, any animal that's been eating GMOs, because she has also seen the difference.
Now, tell us the story that you told us a couple months ago, Jeffrey, about animals when given a choice between, you know, an organic feed or a genetically modified feed, they'll pick the organic one.
You know, it's interesting. It doesn't happen all the time, but it happens enough so that it's reported over and over again. I just got a note from someone in South Africa who said that when they started planting Roundup Ready corn, usually the cows will eat the stubble in the cornfield, but once they started planting Roundup Ready corn, they never go and eat the crop remnants. They go into the lawns or into the other areas and eat the other types of greenery, but they stopped eating after years and years. Same in India. I discovered that last year. There was a certain type of cottonseed cake or oil cakes that they make from cottonseed and feed it to buffalo. But these buffalo, more than half of the buffalo in the region of the state of Haryana of India, were refusing to eat the cottonseed cakes. But those that were, most of them were getting reproductive problems like sterility or premature deliveries or abortions or delayed onset of sexual maturity, things like that. Also, prolapsed uteruses, a lot of deaths among the calves, the newborns, and deaths among the adults, as well as skin problems.
What's happening in the world, the legislation about the GMO?
Well, Kucinich just introduced some bills again, and I applaud him for it. So far in the past, in many, many iterations of introduction, he's never gotten the traction necessary to move it forward. But we're planning a big non-GMO tidal wave in the United States, a tipping point of consumer rejection, by educating people about these health dangers. And I got some more new information about those as well, which I'm happy to share.
Sure.
And what we believe is that there'll be just about 5% of the U.S. shoppers when they stop eating genetically modified brands. That represents 15 million people taken out of the consumer pool from these major companies, that will be sufficient to take it out of the market altogether. And that's what happened in Europe, and the tipping point was achieved there in April of 1999 because it was covered in the mainstream media. Then virtually every major food company committed to stop using GM ingredients within a single week. So getting back to the health dangers, because this is new information, I'm just tabulating and collating the information from these interviews that I've conducted over the past month or two. One veterinarian who handles livestock primarily said that when GMOs were introduced, he saw a lot of increase in viruses in the animals that he was seeing, as well as inflammation of all kinds. Another described a digestive disorder where a particular bacteria that's common in the digestive tract all of a sudden became detrimental and had an overgrowth. And he said he does a lot of autopsies, and he said when he looks at the livers, which is the primary detoxifier in the body, when he looks at the livers of livestock that have been feeding on GMOs, sometimes it looks like a bomb has gone off in the liver. These are his words. And he notices clear differences in the GM-fed versus the non-GM-fed. In fact, I talked to one person who did an autopsy in India of buffalo that were grazing on genetically modified cotton plants after harvest. And they'd only eaten the cotton plants for a single day. And all 13 buffalo died. And he also noticed dramatic changes in the liver, lungs, and digestive.
Let's talk more about these health issues, and we'll take some phone calls with you, Jeffrey, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Well, it's called Aftermath, Surviving the Apocalypse of 2012. Wait till you hear Lawrence Joseph next hour on Coast to Coast AM. And when we come back, we'll take your phone calls with Jeffrey Smith as we talk about genetically modified foods. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Before we take calls, Jeffrey, any more health-related issues with any of these genetically modified crops and animals that eat them?
Absolutely. We talked a lot in the past about the peer-reviewed published studies, but what I'm looking at in the last couple of months are more the anecdotal evidence from veterinarians and others. And what I'm getting, one very, very popular veterinarian for pets said that when GMOs were introduced in 1996, then cats and dogs started getting a lot more allergies and itching. And when he puts the animals on an organic, non-GMO diet, the problems disappear. I know that some farmers told me that when they switched from GM feed to non-GM feed, the death rate and the stillborn rate of the livestock was down, milk production increased, the weight of the animals was up, the variability of the animals' weights was down, and they looked better and they felt better. And in fact, some people actually said that their eyes looked healthier.
Hmm.
And I've been talking to a lot of doctors now who've been prescribing non-GMO diets to patients for months or years, and they say it's one of the most important prescriptions that they give, and they give it to absolutely everyone. And then when I spoke to some of the patients who had switched to a non-GMO diet, they said that there was a huge number of symptoms that apparently were alleviated or actually went away, ranging from digestion to irritable bowel, weight problems, hyperactivity in children, allergies, asthma, migraines, fatigue, skin rashes, and fibromyalgia. Now, some of these people, admittedly, were also getting rid of processed foods at the same time or switching to organic. In some cases, they also removed dairy and wheat. So it was hard to pinpoint. But the thing is, some people did some things and some people did the others, but the common thread among them all was eliminating GMOs. And I remember it reminded me of an event that happened in an Appleton, Wisconsin high school years ago, when over the weekend they completely changed the meal plan and switched from the normal processed foods that kids eat every day at school to completely fresh-made foods that were cooked, you know, fresh every day.
Sure.
So what happened was they accidentally or inadvertently eliminated almost all the GMOs because most of them are in processed foods. What they did find is that the behavior of the entire school improved dramatically.
That's
good.
To
Appleton, Wisconsin, they were on national radio, national TV, all over the world. It was a dramatic change in the behavior of the kids and in their ability to learn.
All right, to the phones we go. Terry is in New York, New York. Go ahead, Terry.
Hello?
Hi.
Oh, hi. I wanted to talk about my experiences with genetic engineered foods.
All right.
Because recently, well, for the past year, my local store that I usually buy from has changed their products. They basically changed to completely genetic engineered foods. They like the watermelons. You can ask them there. They say it's genetic engineering. I eat a lot of the watermelons there. And you know how your liver, it produces certain proteins that can change how your whole body reacts?
Yeah.
Like when you have hepatitis, your skin color can go yellow.
Go ahead.
Due to your liver. That started to happen to me when I started to eat these kinds of foods.
Your body started turning yellow?
Well, my skin started to go like a little yellow, then it turned a little darker, and it got darker.
Jeffrey, have you ever heard of this?
Well, first of all, the good news is watermelon is not genetically modified. Now, there are sometimes you can get seedless watermelons, you can get combinations of apricots and plums and things. This is not genetic engineering in what we're talking about. Genetic engineering is very specific, where you take a gene from one species, typically from bacteria or viruses, and force it into the DNA of another species. Now, the process of inserting the gene causes massive collateral damage and can increase anti-nutrients and toxins and allergens and things, irrespective of whatever gene you put in there. Now, there's only 8 GM food crops in the United States. There's soy, corn, cottonseed and canola are used for oils, sugar beets are used for sugar, and there's papaya from Hawaii and a little bit of zucchini and yellow squash. Now, there used to be tomatoes in the market. They were taken off. Same with potatoes. They were also taken off. So all the other stuff that's on the market right now, that's fruit or vegetables or grains or beans, anything like that, is not genetically modified. It might be a result of selective breeding, but not genetic engineering where they take genes from different species and force them to work together.
What happens, Jeffrey, at the cellular level to a genetically modified food?
Excellent question. When you start with, let's say, one species, and then you insert a gene, and then you grow that cell that into a plant, the DNA is about up to 5% or 2 to 4% different. And the differences are mostly mutations and unexpected changes. There can be hundreds or thousands of mutations up and down the DNA. In addition, the presence of a single gene inserted into the cell can change the expression levels of up to 5% of the natural functioning genes. And so we're talking about massive, overall, holistic changes that people don't know why it happens, but it does. Now, when you change all of those proteins, the proteins interact and create all sorts of metabolic pathways, and in a plant, they create hundreds or thousands of natural products. Some of these products have been found to be very effective at fighting cancer or at altering mood. Some may be poisonous. And many of these natural compounds can obviously change their levels when you change all these changes in the DNA. In fact, in corn and soy, there's higher levels of something called lignin, a woody compound. But the same metabolic pathway that produces lignin also produces a plant pesticide called rotenone, which is linked to Parkinson's disease. So that means that these crops may be increasing Parkinson's disease. In corn from Monsanto, they found that a gene that is normally switched off was switched on, and now it produces an allergen. In soy, there's an allergen that's known in soy, and that's as much as 7 times higher in Monsanto's genetically modified cooked soy compared to non-GM cooked soy. So there's all sorts of unpredicted changes that can occur in the content of the food that we're eating, and very, very few of these changes are looked at before the foods go on the market.
All right, let's go to Los Gatos, California, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Marcia.
Hello. Thank you so much for this topic. I appreciate it, gentlemen.
Sure thing.
I'm looking at the subject of permanency. I know death is pretty permanent, but what I'm looking at is this idea that the pesticide could be involved in the mucosa of the intestine, and even after stopping eating this GMO product, how is it ever permanent to the mucosa of the intestine?
That's a very good question. Well, one of the concern here is that the genes that you insert may transfer into either the bacteria living inside your intestine or possibly into our own cells. Now, there's only been one human feeding study ever conducted and published on genetically modified foods, and it was looking at whether genes, in fact, survive digestion, because the biotech industry said, oh, genes can't transfer because they're destroyed during digestion. Well, it turns out the study not only showed that a large amount of genetically modified DNA does survive passage through the stomach and small intestine, but in 3 of the 7 human subjects, they had found the genetically engineered gene that had been inserted into soybeans. They had eaten the soybeans at some previous time, they don't know when, and that gene or part of that gene transferred into the bacteria living inside their intestines, and it continued to function. Now, soybeans are genetically engineered. They're called Roundup Ready, not to die when sprayed with Roundup herbicide. Now, these folks had Roundup Ready gut bacteria, unkillable with Roundup herbicide because it was producing, their own gut bacteria was producing this genetically modified protein. So this was the only human feeding study. They never followed up to see, for example, if the toxin-producing gene, which is inserted into corn, which produces something called BT toxin, which kills insects. They never look to see if that transfers, which might turn our intestinal bacteria into living pesticide factories. They never looked to see if the viral genes from papaya, zucchini, or squash, or crookneck squash transferred, that might produce viral proteins, which might interfere with our ability to stop getting infections from viruses. So they stopped looking because they didn't want to know. But when I describe this at doctors' conferences where I speak all the time, many doctors come up to me or raise questions from the floor saying, I've seen a lot of gastrointestinal problems in my practice since GMOs were introduced, and maybe it's this gut bacteria transformation.
Fascinating. Let's go to Schenectady, New York. First-time caller is Ray on Coast to Coast. Hey, Ray, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for this discussion in depth about these GMOs. I'm curious about reading a label on a ice cream company's ice cream carton, and they say that the FDA has said that no significant difference has been shown, and no test can now distinguish between milk with recombinant GBH treated or untreated cows. And that is a form of genetically bovine growth hormone is a genetically modified thing, isn't it?
Great
and
question.
Can it have a danger for children and maybe even have an effect in autism?
Absolutely. Here, let me explain what you just read and how that derived. It was a brilliant question. What happened was when Monsanto got their genetically modified bovine growth hormone approved through the FDA, it was at a time when their former attorney was in charge of policy at the FDA, and they had people who were working for Monsanto on this drug who then took positions at the FDA to review and approve the drug as well.
Go figure, right, Jeff?
Yeah, right. In fact, the person who was in charge of policy then is now the U.S. Food Safety Czar. He left the FDA, became Monsanto's vice president. He's now in charge of U.S. food safety. But getting back to bovine growth hormone, this guy, Michael Taylor, who's now U.S. food safety czar, said that he wrote a white paper suggesting that if a dairy were to eliminate RBGH and want to make a claim that it doesn't use a recombinant bovine growth hormone, that it also add this disclaimer that according to the FDA, there's no difference. Well, it's actually untrue. It's a complete lie. According to the FDA and Monsanto's own research, the milk is quite different. It has more pus, it has more antibiotics, it has more growth hormone, it has more IGF-1, insulin-like growth factor 1, which is linked to cancer. In fact, the American Public Health Association condemned the use of bovine growth hormone last year because of IGF-1. The American Nurses Association condemned it, Healthcare Without Harm, Physicians for Social Responsibility, etc. So if you go to non-GMOshoppingguide.com, there you can see a list of products that are not only non-GMO, but when you go to the dairy section, it lists many of the products that are made without the bovine growth hormone. Now, right now, the governor of Ohio has a rule that he pushed through that is going to force dairies, any dairy that sells their products in Ohio, which is all the national brands, to not only have that disclaimer, but to have it so large and so prominently displayed that some of the companies are threatening to stop making RBGH-free claims altogether. So we have an action alert on our site to contact the governor of Ohio and say, get your hands off of our milk, stop interfering with our ability to know which dairy products have RBGH and which don't. He's running for office right now. He's in a tight race, so I would love to see a million people call his offices. You can go to responsibletechnology.org, which is our main website, and there you can link to, on the right side, there's a whole action alert for the Ohio governor who's trying to interfere with your ability to know if your dairy products are free from this bovine growth hormone.
All right, we'll take a few more questions here. We'll go next to Fullerton, California. Hello, Naomi, go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Smith, I am so glad that you're bringing up about Monsanto. I think that more people should see the National Geographic Channel's special, The World According to Monsanto. It really opened up my eyes. I did not even know that Supreme Court Chief Justice Clarence Thomas once worked for Monsanto. And when ex-President Ford was vice president under Ronald Reagan, went to Monsanto labs, and they showed him even learning how to splice a gene.
Yeah, that was Bush.
And,
exactly.
And then they showed how in Peru, this poor farmer, independent farmer boy, where they didn't even want soy products genetically modified, came over through from Argentina, blew into Peru, and how this poor little farmer's boy had to walk through the fields of soy plants to sell his mother's tortillas, and the infections on his legs.
Absolutely. You know, that is a fantastic film. You can read more about it or place orders at MonsantoFilm.com. MonsantoFilm.com. The World According to Monsanto is the best expose on this company. Now, this company told us PCBs were safe, Agent Orange was safe, DDT was safe, and they knew at the time, in many of these cases, that it wasn't. In fact, they got fined $700 million for poisoning people in a factory town with their PCBs, and they knew clearly that it was damaging, and the documents were made public. Now they're in charge, officially in charge, of telling us whether their genetically modified foods are safe. And they actually have 90% of all the genetically modified foods are Monsanto's brands. And so I actually have a 10-part Huffington Post blog all about Monsanto. So you can just Google Jeffrey Smith, Monsanto, Huffington Post, and sit down for with a cup of non-GMO coffee and read all about it. But Monsanto turns out to be one of the most dangerous, if not the most dangerous, company. And it was revealed in 1999 in January that their actual plan was to genetically engineer 100% of all the commercial seeds in the world and patent them. That was their ideal future that Arthur Andersen, a consulting company, was working a plan to create.
Great business plan if you're a stockholder, right?
Exactly.
Let's see if we can squeeze out one more. We'll go to you, Dan, in Highlands, New Jersey. Real quick, Dan, go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. About 10, 15 years ago, I heard a story on the news about how they wanted to make a strawberry that had some of the genes from a flounder so that its cells wouldn't break down when it got frost over it. And back then, I actually thought it was a good idea, and I was angry at the people opposed to it. I want to know if that plan ever actually went ahead, and is all genetic modification that could be done, is it all negative? I mean, is there any good that can come from it?
Great question.
I'll take my answer off there.
All right.
Okay, so the strawberries were created in a laboratory. The antifreeze protein turned out to be bitter. They never introduced it because it didn't taste good. Now, the process of insertion is so fraught with unpredicted side effects that there's no way that the current generation of genetically modified crops can be safely and predictably introduced into the environment. They remember, it can't be recalled. It can cross-pollinate, just like the salmon, which we started the hour with. It's the pollen that gets out there in the plant world, and it contaminates. So now genetic engineering can be used very effectively in certain ways in a laboratory. So you can use it for human gene therapy to try and correct a defective gene. You can use it to create drugs, but you have to respect the side effects that can occur. One genetically modified food supplement, L-tryptophan, killed about 100 Americans and caused 5,000 to 10,000 to fall sick in the 1980s because the genetic engineering process was almost certainly responsible for the deadly contaminants that ended up in the supplement.
Jeffrey, thanks so much. And again, we always offer Monsanto an opportunity to come on the program, debate Jeffrey, to make a statement. They keep refusing. We don't even call them anymore. We'll be back.